Radio MD. RadioMD.com. From sobriety to self-care, it's Rewired Radio. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Technology addiction is running rampant in our population these days. Everyone has a smartphone. Everyone has different, you know, little toys that are, you know, we're becoming dependent on. So today I wanted to talk to Dr. Emily McSpadden about technology addiction or dependency. Welcome to the show, Emily. Is this a topic where you are, you know, just getting bombarded by questions?
It really is. And thanks for having me on to talk about this, because it's becoming more and more an important part of people's conversations. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot about it. And as a college professor, I mean, I'm bombarded with students, not just their difficulties with it, but their use of technology in my classroom. So, yeah, I firsthand experience the problem.
I'm sure everywhere we look now, you know, I was with my family and we were looking around at a restaurant, and seriously, every single person at a table, and they were all eating together, were on their phones. So it's just
right. And that's what makes it dangerous, because it's becoming so normal. It's very normal for everybody to do it. So people sort of shrug it off, but it is a problem for a lot of people.
And do you feel like people, like students that you know, are feeling more disconnected than ever? Do you think it's helping them? I know this is an ongoing conversation.
It really is an ongoing conversation, and I'm glad for that. Not only that, but students themselves are concerned. So that actually brings me some hope. But the usual thing that I hear, and some of my research has been looking at this, is that while students feel like they really do need technology in order to succeed in life and in the classroom, they also feel like it disconnects them, interestingly enough, from what's happening in the interaction between themselves and their professors.
Right. And I know some of your research touches upon, you know, people that are a little bit older. Even myself, I don't consider myself tech savvy. But so how older technology users, we'll just call them older technology users, are so different from the young people these days that are dealing with, you know, technology, and how they have to, you know, type out all their papers. Back when I was still in school, I literally still was writing papers on, you know, a sheet of paper with a pencil. So what's going on in the world of, you know, let's say, our older technology users and our younger ones?
Well, that's actually a fascinating study sort of area, because there's a way to look at this from a social standpoint, because there's two different generations here to consider.
Right.
There's and we can look at it in a very interesting way for technology. For instance, younger people, so millennials, for instance, are people who have been alive and have never not known what a smartphone was. We would call those people digital natives. So those are my students in
digital
college classes, for instance. Right.
Okay,
and then
great.
You have what's known as the digital immigrant. Now, digital immigrants are people who, well, as you described, in my own experiences this way as well, we didn't always have cell phones. We didn't always have access to everything online. And because of that, it's like learning a new language in a new country. So we're immigrants,
absolutely.
Digital immigrants.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you think about it that way, you understand, okay, so this is like being in a different country from my own versus people who have lived here all their lives. That's what technology is like for digital natives versus digital immigrants.
Yeah, different languages completely. I absolutely relate to that. And how is it for you being a professor and you teaching, you know, these young adults now, how is it for you in terms of your own relationship with technology? Have you, you know, tried to be on the up and up, or are you kind of sitting back and, you know?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, people in my position, and this happens in all areas of education, we have to be on the up and up. You know, our bosses, all of the administrators, you know, they want to make sure that you know as much as you can about the available technologies of it for classrooms. And yet, there isn't as much research as you would think on the effectiveness of that technology. So we're supposed to use it, but we don't exactly know how well it works. And meanwhile, we have students who are struggling themselves with using technology. I mean, I know that, for instance, cell phone use is big. Some of my students even write their papers on their cell phone. It's crazy, but true. Right, but there's something known as nomophobia, which is a fear, a real fear of being without your cell phone
or out of cell phone
contact. And, you know, they think that as many as 56 to 58% of Americans who own a smartphone anywhere from 40 to 60% of those people suffer from some degree of this nomophobia. So a lot of people are walking around freaking out that their cell phone isn't nearby. And on top of everything else, they have to live their lives and be productive. So it's very tough to struggle with that in a classroom or at work.
I'm sure. Well, you're not really present if your head is kind of, you know, thinking about, you know, when is that person texting me back or when am I going to get an email? I mean, it's so distracting. And I feel like it's going to really hinder on our youth and how people really connect with one another. I feel like there's more of a disconnect than ever socially and emotionally than there was, you know, in the past.
That's right. And that disconnect is very real. And I think that now mental health professionals are really starting to take it seriously. I mean, they're starting to talk about coining new terms for it, like internet addiction disorder or problematic internet use. And all of these things are starting to become part of the lexicon of addiction discussions, which I think is a very powerful thing for people who are struggling with it.
And social media, in my own practice too, I see that, you know, with technology, there's some people that are addicted to, you know, pornographic sites, or they're addicted to shopping, and they're addicted to gambling online. I mean, we see a lot of these process addictions, they're called, you know, taking shape online. So now you don't have to go to a casino to gamble. You don't have to go to a store to shop. You can do all this right out of your home. And the convenience of that is also creating, we see large numbers of, you know, new dependencies and addictions taking shape.
Exactly. And it's actually interesting that you mentioned gambling as the addiction that sort of started to make its way into staying at home and it being very convenient, because the models that are used for internet addiction are also based on pathological gambling models. So they're all very connected. And so that experience is exactly the same for people who are addicted to the internet or to social media use and stuff like that. So it's becoming a more real and more accepted and understood, but we've got a long way to go, but it's definitely getting there in terms of something that people are looking at. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and thanks to you, and so grateful that you are doing the research to kind of shed light on how we can deal with this, because I know there's a lot of people struggling out there with these new obsessions, and they really can't shake it, which is, you know, is always upsetting to see, and especially you're in the same field as I am, and with so many different forms of therapy out there, I think this research is going to shed a lot of light on how we can now deal with these new kind of process addictions. Are you finding that we have to, you know, implement new ways of healing, or what is the research showing of how we can begin to help people understand, or how could they, you know, what if they are suffering and want to change their lives? What is that you're finding?
Well, what I'm finding so far, and what a lot of other people who are looking at this issue are finding, is interestingly that, you know, we have to think about practicality, because you can't just get rid of all your technology. That's really hard for people to do. Some people feel like they really should, but it makes it hard. Like, how can you have a job and not use your computer? Sometimes, more people say, more professionals are starting to think that a practical goal is better than things like total abstinence. So maybe thinking about, look, I could just cut my phone use down to 1 hour a day, or setting an alarm and saying, okay, I'm putting the phone down. That works for people more than completely cutting yourself off. There's also this idea of mindfulness training that's been used in a lot of different areas, and people are starting to employ it for things like cell phone use and internet use and social media use as well.
I could see how that'd be helpful. Limiting yourself, setting small goals, I think that's all great information for people out there.
Absolutely. And some people focus on their behaviors, whereas other people focus on their motivations. And depending on the person, different things can work for different people.
Yeah. And so, and any new research coming up that you want to share with our audience, or just to tell everybody that you've been, you know, you wrote this book, Five Ways of Doing Qualitative Analysis, and they can, I guess, find all your research there.
Oh, sure. There's research there, but I'm also doing new research on cell phone use, which I hope to be coming up with pretty soon for publication. So that should be good.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today. And you can find Dr. Emily McSpadden and her book, Five Ways of Doing Qualitative Analysis, on Amazon.